and we'll start with a public hearing on House Bill 2352. And Janet, will you give us a rundown?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2352 would eliminate a current requirement that prior to being leased or sold, used recreational vehicles bear an insignia indicating that they comply with building codes, and it would also eliminate the building codes division requirement to inspect those used recreational vehicles. Mr. Chair, the bill, if you want to look at the bill for a minute, the language being taken out on the bottom of page one is the current requirement that no person may sell a recreational vehicle built after 1990 unless it bears an insignia which indicates compliance with the following: the plumbing, mechanical, thermal, fire. And if you look at the top of page two, that's the new language, and it is that a person may not rent, lease, sell, or offer for rent, et cetera, within this state a recreational vehicle unless the recreational vehicle bears an insignia of compliance. And where the used recreational vehicles get, in effect, taken out is in line B, has previously been lawfully registered and titled within the United States. So that's kind of where the used vehicles will no longer...
That exempts them.
Right.
Yeah,
okay. And so that's kind of how the bill does what it does, and it was confusing if you kind of didn't see where that came in. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you, Janet. I guess just start right now. Could I have Mark Long, please?
Morning, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, morning, Mark.
Joining
morning,
me is,
Patrick.
Morning, Pat Allen. For the record, Mark Long, Administrator of Building Codes. What I'd like to do is just kind of give you some quick backdrop to this bill. We worked with the proponents during the interim on this bill. And let me talk to you about RV regulation. 6 or 7 years ago, maybe 8 years ago, we really worked with the dealers in Oregon to set up a kind of a quality control program. We went around the state and provided training and education to the techs. We worked with the dealer's own inspection process where they take in these used units. They go through a PDI system, pre-delivery inspection, check off to make sure all the safety features have been met. We feel at this point that our efforts are better focused on continuing the training, education, quality control approaches, looking at the new products, and this additional looking at each used unit that came into the state really hasn't provided any regulatory benefit. We've tracked our inspections. We're not seeing any life safety concerns, so we think this bill supports our overall effort at building codes to look at more quality control approaches, more training, education, more reliance on those systems. And we think that even though the bill is written in a way that's kind of hard to understand when you first read it, it meets our needs from a regulatory standpoint. We're comfortable with it.
Thank you, Mark.
I just briefly wanted to add Patrick Allen, Office of Regulatory Streamlining. Given the limited benefit of the existing system of regulation and the alternative means that the division has identified to keep people safe, that this bill, although not part of the formal streamlining package, is completely consistent with the principles we've used in trying to identify good regulatory streamlining this session.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Shields.
Do you anticipate that this change might affect consumer safety at all?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shields, I don't. Again, we've looked at what we've done over the last 6 to 7 years. We're not seeing any significant life safety issues. Quite frankly, the things that we were seeing were missing labels, different things within the RVs that the dealers now have in their possession. They have check sheets that they can use. They go through a whole pre-inspection process, and we feel comfortable with what they're doing. We monitor them on an ongoing basis as well. It doesn't relieve that responsibility.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you, gentlemen, for your testimony this morning. Could I have Sean Miller and Roger Kirshner? Did I get that right?
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Sean Miller, I represent the Oregon Recreational Vehicle Dealers Association. As Mark indicated, this was a bill that we had worked on with the division in the interim. And I do want to say that, you know, when you look at the language, because the existing law had both used and new what they did, and as Janet indicated, it is confusing because you delete the language and still add new language that keeps the inspections for new RV vehicles while deleting the sticker requirement for the used vehicles. And that's why it's a little confusing, but it does accomplish our goals. And the proposed change, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, when we look at the actual sales of used RVs in the state, about 70% of roughly of sales are with private parties. These are people that might take a used RV and stick it in a one of the trader magazines or stick it in the newspaper and paid and sell it with absolutely no requirements from building codes. No sticker, none of the quality control measures that you've heard from Mark. And so, again, this is, we believe, one of those good government bills where 70% of the private sales are occurring without any regulation, and the dealers are being, has actually a lot more regulation put on them and the responsibilities of being a dealer to go through that checklist. We believe this is just a good government bill. I want to turn it over to Roger to give examples of why this is a problem for the dealers to actually administer, and because of the time constraints it takes to actually sometimes get the sticker on and the loss of time when a unit comes into the lot.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think Sean read my notes here. He has pretty much the same information I'm going to provide you with here today. But
Roger, could I have your name and address for the record, please?
Oh, yes. Roger Kirshner. I live at 453 63rd Avenue Northeast here in Salem.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. One of the problems that arises if we take a used unit in on trade that does not have a building codes agency sticker, we're required to contact someone from the agency. They come out and inspect the unit. It may or may not, usually happens in a timely manner, but it may not, and it prevents us from selling that unit until it gets that sticker on it. Most of these units have withstood the test of time because they're used units that have been in use as a dealer, a franchise dealer, which is required to have a service department. Anything like this that we take in on trade goes through our service department before it's sold to someone. The systems are checked thoroughly, and we do those things anyway. So the requirement to put a sticker on there just seems kind of mute. As was testified earlier, the Building Codes Agency has training programs for service technicians that many of them attend. And they do a good job of training our service technicians so we know what to look for. And as Sean mentioned earlier, these tags are only required on a unit that's sold by a dealer. The thousands of units that are sold in this state between private parties, this rule doesn't even apply. And even so, as mentioned earlier, there's no rampant safety problems that have come to the surface.
Sean? Representative Kitts.
I'll let.
Yes, Sean. Mr. Chair, Representative Shields, just maybe to go back to some of the consumer safety issues. A few sessions ago, there was a requirement that all dealers were required to have service centers. And so, again, you go through these service centers, which private parties don't have to do before they sell. But another added thing is all dealers are licensed with the Department of Transportation. The Attorney General's office lists different requirements on selling requirements. So if you go through the service center and a piece of equipment doesn't work and you tell a consumer that it does work, you get in trouble for that. And so there is a lot more regulation, not only with the Department of Transportation and the Attorney General's office and their model rules too, that I think help in some of those consumer safety issues.
Mm-hmm. Representative Kitts?
I think that Sean read my notes as well, because that was my question. So thank you.
Any other questions?
One more.
Representative Shields.
Are there dealers that sell only used RVs?
Yes, there are a few consignment lots that sell only used.
Would this be a problem for them? Do they have any expertise in inspecting knowing safe from unsafe?
As I mentioned, Representative Shields, nothing has really risen to the surface on this. Although some of these lots aren't required to have a service department, if they really intend to stay in business and be responsible, most of them do have some kind of service facility, although it's not required.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Representative Holby.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Just want to clarify one point for me here. I'm just having reading through the bill. I'm trying to discern what's new and what's used. Is my understanding of it is that if recreational vehicle's been licensed and titled in another state, then it is a used vehicle. Is that correct?
Well, yes, it could have been licensed and titled in the state of Oregon and still be used. It, you know, could have been purchased new 3 or 4 years ago and then traded in on another one. That unit would be a used unit.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holley, are you getting at, for instance, if it's a used vehicle coming from another state, the standards on new? And I might want to have Mark talk about the standards on new, because that's a federal issue on actually inspecting all the dealers on a national level, and so that's fairly consistent throughout all 50 states on all the new vehicles. And
Mark, could you come up, please?
I don't know if you want to.
Once again.
And you might want to touch on that too,
sure.
Right?
Good morning again, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Mark Long, just for the record. What this bill does is it still allows us to regulate the new product. Okay, so on a national level, there are a variety of manufacturers located all over the state. Most of are all over the country. Most of them are back in Indiana and the Midwest. We also have manufacturers here in Oregon, Monaco and other kinds of things. And because we have standards for, obviously, our factories here in Oregon for the new products, we want to make sure that those standards apply to the national products that are coming to Oregon. So this doesn't relieve our responsibility to look at the new product, both here in-state and all over the country. It doesn't relieve our responsibility to oversee and monitor the dealer and continue the training programs for consignment dealers as well as dealers that sell new and used products. So that's what this bill does. Still gives us the authority to look at the national playing field, make sure that the new products, that if somebody pops up somewhere, that we have a comfort level that they understand the plumbing and electrical and mechanical codes. Once they're on a quality control program, then we monitor their activity. Any used unit, whether it was sold originally in Washington or California or any of the other states, comes to Oregon, because we regulate the dealers now under a quality control program, and we've been working with them for, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, the training program. We feel that that's adequate to regulate the used product, and that's really what this bill does. So I hope I've answered your questions. Yeah, follow up.
Thank you. I think that sort of addresses my concern that you still regulate the dealers when they sell something. I was just concerned that, you know, we could license something in another state that maybe has no licensing fees and ship all, you know, a whole train load of RVs into the state of Oregon and go on to the public without having been inspected.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holby, what this does, and again, it's consistent with the things that we're doing at building codes as a whole. If you remember when I was here a couple of weeks ago, some of the regulatory streamlining, different approaches that we're doing. We believe that the training and education, the oversight of the dealer, and working with their techs to go through and PDI, I think that's the proper term, PDI these units, where they check the safety components as part of his requirements under his dealer's license as well as the building codes process. We think that that's as good or better inspection than, frankly, calling us up and running around all over the state and looking at these units one at a time.
That answered my question.
All right? Thanks. That's where we're at.
Any other questions? The insignias that they're talking about here, these are when you go through an RV, or it's the appliances and other installations around. They got these stickers around to the. Is that what they're?
Mr. Chair, those are some of just the required stickers to provide warning. We've actually provided those to the dealers and given them templates so that they can affix those. The actual sticker, the regulatory sticker, something that's attached to the outside, and it says it's been looked at by the state of Oregon and gives us some information about the manufacturer. Again, we continue to track the new manufacturers on a in-state and a national basis. So
okay.
It's a variety of things.
Thank you. And Roger, I have one more question. During the session, I live in my fifth wheel over in West Salem. It's an Alpenlight. I know that that's one of the products that you handle. And,
that's right.
And when the session's over around June 15th, can I now make an appointment with you to get that service before I take it home?
That would be pretty easy to do.
Thank you, gentlemen, for your testimony. We'll close the. First, is there anyone else here who wants to testify on it? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2352 and open the work session on House Bill 2352. Representative Getz.
Mr. Chairman, I would move House Bill 2352 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Kitts moves House Bill 2352 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Katie, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Esposito.
Excuse.
Representative Gilman.
Yes.
Representative Colby.
Aye.
Representative
Kitts. Aye.
Representative Shawford.
Aye.
Representative Shields.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carries. Consent calendar?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I would move that we place 2352 on the consent calendar.
Representative Kitts moves we place House Bill 2352 on the consent calendar. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, it's on the consent calendar.
Enough has been 40 minutes of debate on that and the whole war.
I want to open a public hearing on House Bill 2055. And can Janet give us a rundown on the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2055 would allow certain applicants for alcohol service permits an additional 15 days after notification that they've been refused such a permit, and this gives them 15 additional days to request a hearing for review of the decision. It applies to applicants who were refused for a reason other than failure to complete an alcohol server education course and test. Mr. Chair, the agency is here to explain the problems they've run into since a Attorney General model rules changed and required a different type of notice. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. We have John Steubenwald, please. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you. My name is John Steubenwald. I'm the Communications Director for the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. Mr. Chair, this is really a very straightforward, simple bill, a technical fix to a little issue we've experienced. I've submitted written testimony, so I'll summarize. Current statute requires folks who sell or serve alcohol in a restaurant, bar, or tavern to have an alcohol service permit from the OLCC. Further, OLCC is authorized to deny applicants for this service permit based on certain grounds, including grounds of criminal history. And specifically, the criminal history might include convictions on felony drug charges, crimes of violence, DUI, or furnishing alcohol to a minor. Could be some of those criminal histories by which OLCC could deny the service permit. And of course, under statute, a person who is denied a service permit has the right to request an administrative hearing to contest that denial. Now, to the bill. It's been our experience that folks who are denied a service permit based on a criminal history, we notify those folks of the denial by certified mail. Statute gives us a 15-day window currently to receive notice from those folks that they'd like an administrative hearing. It's been our experience, quite simply, that in some cases, especially in rural parts of the state, 15 days isn't enough time. It's really as simple as that. So this bill simply extends the 15 days to 30 days so folks can have enough time to let us know that they'd like a hearing. That's really what the bill does. I think it's a good little bill. Be happy to respond to questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Janet?
Mr. Chair, thank you. John, I forgot to ask you, and I talked to you before, why the exception in 30 days for the, or keeping it 15 days for the person who fails to complete an alcohol server education?
Sure, Mr. Chair, Administrator Adkins. The failure to complete an alcohol server education course is, in practical effect, what we do in that case is we notify folks that they need to go ahead and complete the course, which they can typically do in about a week. So rather than going through the whole process of requesting a hearing to contest, it's really, we will simply notify folks that you haven't completed the course, you need to complete the course. It's available from private sector providers throughout the state. Go ahead and complete the course and then you're good to go.
Any other questions, John? Don't see any. Thank you, John.
Thank you
for your testimony. Is there anyone else here to testify on House Bill 2055? And then we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2055 and open the work session on House Bill 2055. Representative Kipps.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2055 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Kipps moves House Bill 2055 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Katie, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Gilman.
Yes.
Representative Colby.
Aye.
Representative Kipps.
Aye.
Representative Shoffler.
Aye.
Representative Shields.
Aye.
Representative Esquema.
Excuse.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carries. The chair would entertain a motion of Representative Kipps.
Mr. Chair, I would move to replace House Bill 2055 on the consent calendar as well.
Representative Kipps moves House Bill 2055 be placed on the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so done. And, okay. Even lost my schedule, didn't it?
Uh-huh.
Oh, there it is. Okay, 2057. Right. Well, open a public hearing on House Bill 2057. And, John, you're up again. All right, Janet, go ahead and give us a rundown first, and then come on up, John.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2057 does two basic things, replacing a temporary, which is like a special event liquor sales license fee that's currently now $25 per five-hour period with a fee of $50 per day. And if you look at the bill, then that's in Section 1 of the bill. You can see the change on page 2. And the second thing the bill does is allows temporary licensees to have alcohol serving areas that are set aside where minors will be prevented from access. And this is a typical kind of what you think of as a beer garden or wine garden area. Mr. Chair, the bill does have a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee because it affects fees. And we have had some discussions with Legislative Council and the agency about the wording of the on page 3, and may, depending on your discussion today, may require an amendment to clarify.
Thank you, Janet. John?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John Steubenvall, Communications Director for the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. Mr. Chair and members, as the Administrator stated, this bill really does two simple things. The first thing is it changes the fee for a temporary sales license for to serve alcohol. Currently, the fee is $25 for each 5 hours of the licensed event. It's been our experience that this has proven somewhat complicated and confusing to folks who apply for this temporary sales license, since most folks who apply for this license are not in the business. They're not used to the state liquor licensing process. So what the bill proposes to do is to standardize the fee at $50 per day. Our information shows that in fiscal year 03, for example, the average duration of a temporary event was 8.42 hours. So that would be exactly a wash. In other words, $25 per 5 hours equals $50 per day. So based on the experience, the, the $50 fee would apply either way under either structure, but it still would be much easier to calculate for folks who have longer events. For example, we have events on the coast, we have events in Metro Portland area that last up to 4 days. So if we're looking at $25 for 5 hours, obviously those folks are going to save some money if it's $50 a day. So really the rationale for changing the fee structure is simply to make it a little easier to understand and calculate. The second provision addresses what is really a counterintuitive piece of the statute. Currently, the statute in effect prohibits some temporary sales licensees from having what's commonly called a beer garden. And that seems counterintuitive. It seems counterintuitive indeed. What the intent of this portion of the legislation would be to allow these licensees the option of having what we commonly refer to as a beer garden. Now, I understand that the current statute precedes my time at the OLCC, but it's my understanding that when this statute was initially adopted by the Legislative Assembly, there was a concern that some licensees might have a special event solely for the purpose of having a beer garden. And they didn't want to, the Assembly didn't want to go there. That's why the statute is written, as I understand it, as it's written today. But what we've done with this proposed legislation is to say that these folks also have to submit a plan to the OLCC and have that plan approved. So with that provision, we think we can address any issues of, in effect, we want to have an event, they have a beer garden. And at the same time, we can give family-oriented or larger festivals the option of having an alcohol-only area, a beer garden, if those folks so choose. Now, I understand that there are ways. I understand that some folks have looked at the wording in the amendment and have read it differently than our intent.
Representative Kitts.
Two questions, if I might. Events lasting less than 5 hours, you know, I think of banquets, I think of wedding receptions, a lot of events that I can think of that would last under 5 hours. I don't understand how you can, so that's a concern of mine, because you're going to raise fees on a myriad of different people with that regard. The second is I'm wondering how one calculates the average time of an event when it's simply less than 5 hours or longer than 5 hours. How do you come up with an average?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kitts, the way the program works today is less than 5 hours would equal 5 hours. 5 hours 20 minutes, for example, would equal 2 5-hour chunks.
Okay, but if it lasted 5 hours and 20 minutes, how would the OLCC know that?
Well, the calculation that I spoke to earlier, Mr. Chair, Representative Kitts, the calculation I spoke to earlier would be on based on the records that the licensees submitted to us, then telling us how long their event would be.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
And this is just a novel idea. Why, instead of raising it up to $50 to be consistent, why not leave it at 25 to be consistent?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kitts, at the risk of my own neck at this point, I don't believe we would have particular heartburn over a particular fee amount, since, quite frankly, this is not a big revenue-generating item.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. More of a comment, then. If the OLCC is not objecting, if the only reason for this is some simplification of the licensing, I would submit we postpone this to a date certain and draft some -1 amendments to make it $25 per day instead of the $50 per day, if the OLCC doesn't object to that.
This has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and that could the testimony we got here could go along down to Ways and Means.
So would we then refer this bill to Ways and Means and not to the floor?
Yes, it doesn't go to the floor, it goes to Ways and Means.
Thank you.
Representative Shawcliffe.
I will join my esteemed colleague in that request. My question, though, is when my wife and I got married, we had to get event insurance. I think we paid $125 for $1 million. It says in here they're not required to post a bond. Now, is there any requirement that these folks have any kind of insurance for the folks that they're having fun with, which I don't want to dampen their fun by any stretch of the imagination. But if I go get my contractor's license to do contracting, I have to show bond and insurance, which is a good idea. You know, we're licensing these folks to regulate them because we don't want things getting out of hand. I would assume that's the purpose behind this. So there's no requirement to show that the people that are getting the license have any kind of liability insurance, or is that just left up to whoever and wherever they're having it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, there's no current such requirement. I believe this precedes my time at the OLCC, but I believe the intent of this part of the statute was to really provide for some fundraising opportunities for certain charitable, political, and civic organizations. That was really the intent of this whole section of statute, and I believe that the assembly at that point anyway didn't want to put a lot of requirements that might crimp the fundraising abilities.
Well, thank you, and I would imagine these folks are reasonable, responsible people, and they probably have, you know, property insurance that would cover all that. And I think, does this then apply to, like, the good people that were having wine every Friday night at the senior citizens' homes? Were they required to come down? There was an article in the paper several years ago, and they were having wine at their evening weekly event, and somebody went down and said, no, they don't have an OLCC license, and made them quit, which I thought was a bit much. But or is it just for, like, raffles at schools and stuff like that? Is that where we're going here?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, yeah, it's absolutely the latter.
Thank you very much.
Representative Holman.
I have a question about do you have a idea of or some numbers about what the administrative cost of issuing these permits for the OLCC staff and doing the paperwork on this is per event?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holby. Afraid, sir, can I get back to you? To answer your question, not in front of me right now. I'd be happy to get back to you on that.
Thank you.
Is there any other questions? No more citizens.
No.
Okay. Thank you, John, for your testimony.
Thank you.
Yeah. Is there anyone else here that wants to testify on House Bill 2057?
Mr. Chairman, would the chairman indulge me for 1 minute and ask the committee to stand at ease for a minute for clarification?
We can stand at ease.
All Mr. Chair, I would just make the request of the OLCC as part of the technical fixes that they also have coming, that they also amend the bill to read $25 per day from the $50 per day for their simplification process and not raise it, but rather keep it at the lower number before the referral to Ways and Means takes place.
Yeah, Representative Kitts, we can, staff can request that amendment, and before we will work the bill in a later session. And so, is there any other comments or discussion? Representative Foley.
Mr. Chair, I would probably agree with that, but I'd kind of like to know that the cost of the permit of $25 is covering the cost to the state of Oregon and OLCC for administering the permits.
Thank you. And that can be part of the discussion whether we decide to adopt that amendment or not to the bill.
Thank you.
And John, can you have those figures for us then? Thank you. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2057, and we have Representative Crummell here with us this morning. Task Force, and we're opening a public hearing on House Bill 2238.
Yeah, that's right.
Good morning, Representative.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Janet, can you give us a rundown on the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2238 is brought to you by the House Interim Committee on Government Operations and Oversight, which Representative Crummell chaired during the interim, and would require that the OLCC offer applicants who want both a liquor sales license and a lottery game retailer contract the option of a consolidated application. The approval of the application would application form itself and the information required would have to be approved by both agencies, and it specifies that the application would only be accepted if payment was made to both agencies at the same time, and that OLCC would do the action of forwarding the payment and the application information to the Lottery Commission. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. Go ahead, Representative Crummell.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. For the record, I'm Jerry Crummell, State Representative, House District 26. And next to me is Mr. Mark Zager, who is the owner of Ace's Tavern in Gaston. This issue was brought to our House Interim Committee on Government Operations and Oversight after a call had been placed to me by Mr. Zager because of some actions that had been taken by OLCC as well as Lottery. And one of the things that it appeared when we met in committee was that there didn't seem to be good information sharing necessarily between OLCC and Lottery, and Mr. Zager may have a different opinion on that. However, this is one of two bills dealing with both agencies that came before our committee, and the other bill that I don't know if you'll see it or one of the other committees will see it, but when it comes out has to do with and actually it should be out has to do with requiring the lottery to extend due process type of law to their contracts because of the effects that it has on the retailers, and Mr. Zager can go into that a little bit more. But pertinent to this particular bill, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, what we wanted to do is part of the discussion around this was that there should be a streamlining of the application process for both OLCC and Lottery, and many times when a person applies for an OLCC license, they also are wanting to apply for a lottery license or a lottery contract. In the current process, a person gets their OLCC stuff, and much of the same information that they have already had to give for the OLCC license is then required again by the lottery, and there's no sharing of information between the two. So consequently, a person sits down and fills out a 47-page or however many page form it is for OLCC, and then turns around and fills out the very same 47-page or however many page application it is for the lottery, and a lot of the same information is already there. Now there are a couple of other things that the lottery would need need, and so there's some logistics that would need to be worked out. But there's a couple of additional things that, lottery looks for when they before they do a contract versus OLCC when they allow an OLCC server or not server's license but establishment license. So the purpose of this bill is really to get the two agencies working together and to try to streamline that process so that and then the information that can be shared between the two agencies and OLCC would become kind of the lead agency as far as the initial paperwork going into and the payments going into. And then, excuse me. And then for lottery fees that would have already been paid to OLCC. This bill does permit for the OLCC to then submit those fees on behalf of the applicant to the lottery commission for their consideration as far as being a candidate for a lottery contractor concerned. So I think that's. Really, what we're trying to do is make it a little bit easier for our retailers to be able to apply. And with that, I'd like to let you hear briefly from Mr. Zagger, if that's all right, Mr. Chair. And then I'd be happy to answer any questions that anyone may have.
Thank you, Representative Mr. Zagger. Would you like to give your testimony now?
Well, thank you, Chairman. I'm Mark Zagger, Ace Tavern. I've owned the Ace for 20 years, and several years ago, 2003, came crosswise with the OLCC, through it all, the OLCC gave me a monetary fine and suspended me liquor sales operations for 4 days. And through that action, then my feeling, and only mine, that punitively the Lottery Commission revoked my lottery contract permanently, and caused me a considerable financial hardship that I feel was unfair. And through the legislators, Mr. Crummel, I called him and he helped me get back on my feet. And I just think through, and I had no violations with the Lottery Commission. And I feel that there maybe should be better communication between government agencies regarding this. That's basically all I have to say.
Thank you, sir. Representative Hoffman.
Yeah, I just want to use some visual aids here to help me out. Representative and maybe Mr. Steubenbaugh, too. I don't know if he's going to speak to this or not, but I understand that to get a lottery license, you have to have an OLCC license, correct? There aren't any lottery folks that don't have an OLCC. So really, this makes perfect sense that you just fill out one form, it's sent on to the respective agencies, they go over it. That makes perfect sense to me, and I hope it helps small businesses, because I've had to fill out a lot of forms myself. So my question to Mr. Zagger, too, is as a business owner, this would probably help you in your streamlining and wading through the bureaucracy and all that stuff, I'd imagine. Am I correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schuffler, yes, absolutely. There would be, of course, some more information or different information that the lottery commission may need and require, but a lot of it is repetitive that would definitely streamline.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Shields.
Yes, I was just curious. We were talking about a 30-day hearing possibility for people who've been had their license rejected. When you had your conflict with OLCCD, and this is a bit of a rookie question, but do you have the right to a hearing to a different authority or a different board on your issue?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shields. Yes, there is a appeal process. With the OLCC.
Thank you.
Is there any other question? And so, the experience you went through, you had your license with OLCC suspended for some reason or other, and because of that, then the Lottery Commission, you lost your license with the lottery. And then when OLCC license was reinstated, the lottery license, or the agreement was not then, huh? Is that?
Mr. Chair, I was fined basically $16,000 for over-serving, serving a visibly intoxicated person, and suspended for 4 days. And after that 4-day suspension, the Lottery Commission revoked my contract.
Okay. And it wasn't reinstated, or was reinstated?
It was reinstated August, I believe, of 2004, after resubmitting a new application, but it was permanently revoked.
And one of the things I would point out, if I may jump in here, Mr. Chair, is that and the due process aspects are part of another bill, but part of the problem is that it certainly gave off the appearance that OLCC had exhausted their ability in terms of what they could find Mr. Zager and what they could exact from him, and then turned it over to the lottery, and the lottery in essence created or gave him a de facto $100,000 plus fine because of the lost revenues, because of the cancellation of the contract, and yet up to that point he had had no issues with the lottery from a standpoint of there had been no discrepancies, there had been no violations of the contract, there had been no, but because of the suspension of the OLCC license, they did need to suspend him from the lottery, because you have to have, Representative Schaffler is absolutely correct, you have to have both an OLCC license in order to have a lottery contract. And so the problem that this sort of created in Mr. Zager's case is that it did create this de facto fine, if you will, for the action of the OLCC. And what we're trying to accomplish with this bill, and how this is really pertinent, is that at the time, well, first of all, creating I think better communication between OLCC and lottery. If lottery said, you know, yeah, we need to shut off his machines for 4 days while he's down, but then we can go back and not necessarily be so heavy-handed, but when it's time to reapply, and when a new person is wanting to reapply, and one of the problems that we identified during the hearing with Mr. Zager in September was that when a person is going to apply, it's a very encumbering process. It's a very cumbersome process, and what we're trying to do with this bill is to see if we can't streamline that. So when a person is wanting to get both an OLCC license and a lottery contract, they can do it with one set of paperwork.
Thank you, Representative Schaffler.
Yeah, thank you, Representative. Just to clarify, this bill is to streamline the process for small businesses all over the state, not to question whether or not agencies are going about their due process, right or wrong, heavy-handed or not. And I don't know the circumstances of this case or any other, and I'm confident we're not going to try that case here or in any subsequent meetings. But this bill, just to clarify, is to streamline and help small businesses wade through the bureaucracy of getting squared away with the government and providing these services that so many people want and need.
Mr. Chair and Representative Shoffler, that would be correct. And the due process aspect will be in another bill. It will probably be before you act later.
Representative Kitts.
So, if I understand this correctly, if you've got the lottery here and the OLCC here, what you're asking for is the state to come in here and help the two work together.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kitts, well, being that both of them are state agencies, yes, we're asking for, what we as a legislature would be doing is asking for these two agencies, because they do play together, if you will, on the same playground in a lot of ways, is that we're asking them to play a little better together and in a more streamlined way so that our small businesses don't have mountains and mountains of paperwork to have to go through to be able to get both an OLCC license and a lottery contract. One of the things that I would point out as well is that this is very much a precursor for people to be able to apply online, utilizing a lot of the same formats. Granted, if there's information, additional information that lottery needs, but that could actually be on the same form, so that once all of the other information is collected along with the information that the lottery needs, it goes through the OLCC to the lottery.
Thank you, Representative Shoffler, for the use of visual aids.
My pleasure.
I commend you on your use of visual aids.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative, you have some amendments coming to...
Yes, Mr. Chair, I did forget to mention that. Thank you. I am working with... there are some concerns that OLCC has, and I don't know if John is signed up to testify on this bill, but there are some concerns that OLCC has about their authority to be able to share some of the information and make payment to lottery and that sort of thing. Although I think it's in the bill, but their folks at the OLCC have some questions about that. So we will I will work with John on that. And also, and I don't know if Mr. Linden is going to testify or not, but I know that there are some other groups that do have an interest in this bill and may want to have a work group put together. And if that's the case, Mr. Chair, at your request, I would be happy to kind of convene a work group around this bill and get the issues fleshed out and get amendments put together before we would bring it to you.
Thank you, Representative. Neither the lottery or the OLCC are signed up to testify on this bill today, but we have representatives here from both of those agencies. If the committee would like to hear from them, or we can get that testimony should it be wanted when we look at the amendments when the bill comes back.
I'd rather they just wait till they get the language and then come back.
Okay. Thank you, committee. Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much, and I will, if that's your request, I'll go ahead and put a work group together then.
Fine.
And we'll get amendments, and then I'll let you
come back arm in arm.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Kitts.
Representative Crumlin, if you wish somebody from the committee to be part of that work group so that the committee has a working knowledge, or do you want to just simply convene the work group and then come back to the committee with the information?
I would be more than happy to have somebody from the committee be involved with that work group. And so, Representative Kitts, if you would like to, or I can, I'll have Janet let you all know. How about if I go ahead and schedule it?
Okay.
And then I'll ask Janet or staff to let you all know when it's going to be, and then anyone that wants to, please do come and give input and be part of that work group. That'd be terrific.
That sounds like a working arrangement. Thank you, Representative.
Great. Thank you, Chairman Brown.
Uh-huh. And we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2238. And with that, I think we've completed our business for the day. The committee have anything else? Janet? Mm-hmm. Well, we are efficient.
Yes, we are.
Seeing nothing else, no objections, we are adjourned.